in Thailand. The concept of transgender is changing now. You don't have to be very beautiful, but you have to have a brain to survive in this society.
In Kenya, homosexuality is considered a crime both against Christianity and Islam.
Having my mom come from a very Christian background and read and translate and interpret the Bible the way everybody else is doing gives her grounds for which to hate the lesbian in me. But I expect to challenge her because in the end, it's the same Bible that's about preaching love.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A lesbian takes the helm of Iceland's melting government, trans women create their own space in Thailand, and a Kenyan activist fights for visibility. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 31st, 2009. It was widely reported this week that the world will have its first openly lesbian prime minister. Iceland's 66-year-old social affairs minister, Jóhanna Sigurðardóttir, would also be her country's first female PM. In a country where LGBT and heterosexual culture seem to meld seamlessly, Icelanders generally consider Johanna's sexuality to be a non-issue. Iceland has been particularly hard hit by the global economic meltdown, and public outrage, including the largest anti-government demonstration in years, forced the center-conservative coalition to resign. Johanna has been picked by a new center-left coalition to be the caretaker PM until national elections, which have tentatively been scheduled for May 9th. Her Social Democrats have 18 seats in parliament. The Greens have 9, the Progressives have 7, and the Liberals have 4. The former government-leading Conservative Independence Party currently holds 25 seats. The parties winning the largest percentage of votes in the election will decide who the next permanent prime minister will be.
Most observers are saying that Johanna's party won't have enough votes for her to remain as prime minister beyond the May elections. But despite the general public's overwhelming distaste for other ministers in the ruling coalition, she was recently named by 73% of respondents in Iceland's Gallup poll as her nation's most popular government official. Johanna began her slow rise to power as a flight attendant in 1962 and is a longtime union organizer. She first won election to Iceland's parliament in 1978. And served as the country's Minister of Social Affairs for several governments from 1987 to 1994. She returned to lead the ministry again in May 2007 and has held that post since then. She's known for allocating generous amounts of public funding to help the disabled, the elderly, and domestic violence organizations, and her refusal to accept a government-subsidized luxury car and personal chauffeur has endeared her to the public. She's seen by many as a unifying character capable of easing tensions in Iceland. Johanna has for several years been in a civil union with 54-year-old author, journalist, and playwright Jónína Leósdóttir. Those unions give such couples the same legal rights as heterosexual marriage.
Colombia's Constitutional Court ruled this week that same-gender couples must be given the same rights as heterosexuals in common-law marriages. The ruling, which specifically includes state benefits and residency and housing protections, builds upon earlier high court decisions giving gay and lesbian couples inheritance, pension, health, and social security rights. The court has specifically said in its rulings, however, that the creation of civil unions for lesbian and gay couples was an issue for the country's legislature. Lobbying by the country's dominant Roman Catholic Church, which threatened supportive lawmakers with denial of the sacraments, doomed such a bill in Colombia's parliament last year. All the advances for same-gender couples in the South American country have come from constitutional court rulings.
A U.S. federal court this week denied the request of Proposition 8 backers to block access to the names and addresses of some 36,000 people who donated money in support of California's same-gender marriage ban, which passed by more than 52% in November. The two groups spearheading the effort, ProtectMarriage.com and the National Organization for Marriage California, claim that donors have been the targets of threats, vandalism, and public protests. But the court upheld the state's 35-year-old Political Reform Act, which makes the identities of those giving $100 or more to ballot initiatives or politicians a matter of public record. U.S. District Judge Morrison England Jr. ruled that if there ever needs to be sunshine on a political issue, it is with a ballot measure. Yes on 8 campaign officials said hundreds of people have alleged harassment, intimidation, or threats. They argued that First Amendment rights to be free from retaliation outweighed the state's interest in disclosure. According to court records, however, only one of the 9 people mentioned in the lawsuit claiming harassment actually donated to the campaign. The other 8 worked as volunteers, spoke at campaign rallies, or displayed yard signs and bumper stickers. California Attorney General Jerry Brown and Secretary of State Deborah Bowen have both said that people should file criminal reports if they experience harassment. They wrote that Prop 8 backers should not be given a special privilege of anonymity for themselves alone. While the federal district court ruling prevents Prop 8 supporters from obtaining a preliminary injunction against the state's release of further donor names in the coming week, the Associated Press reported that the decision is still likely to be appealed. The California Supreme Court is expected to hear oral arguments in the legal challenge to the constitutionality of Proposition 8 itself in March.
The news was not as good for LGBT people in other parts of the world. The government of Bahrain, a Middle Eastern constitutional monarchy, is cracking down on a number of online social networking sites, including gay and lesbian sites. The country is considered to be more liberal than its other Islamic neighbors like Saudi Arabia, but same-gender sex is still a social taboo and a criminal offense there. LGBT activists worry that the denial of access in Bahrain to such popular online sites as gaydar.com will force more courageous gays and lesbians to meet in public, placing them at risk for harm from family, friends, and strangers.
The announcement that Lebanon's LGBT rights group, Helem, has won the prestigious Philippa D'Souza Award from IGLHRC, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, was tempered by reports this week that 2 gay men were assaulted and arrested by members of the country's military. The 2 were apparently having sex in the lobby of an uninhabited building in a Beirut suburb when Lebanese army soldiers discovered them. They were dragged out into the street, humiliated, and severely beaten. Bystanders eventually intervened, but after spending the night in the military barracks, the men were handed over to civil authorities and reportedly remain in custody. Lebanon's penal code punishes sex that contradicts the laws of nature with up to 1 year in prison. The Philippa D'Souza Award recognizes the courage and effectiveness of groups or individuals dedicated to improving the human rights of people who are stigmatized and abused because of their sexuality or HIV status. Helem said on its website that it is high time that the country's lawmakers looked at an obsolete, ridiculous law that condemns and punishes homosexuality in Lebanon. At a time when gay marriage is permitted in many countries, the authorities hypocritically deny the simplest expression of reality, which they will have to face one day or another.
IGLHRC says that arrests of gay people also continue in Egypt, where, as we've previously reported, anti-gay abuse by government authorities has escalated in recent years. The latest IGLHRC citation comes from a January 10th report from Cairo by Almohit, a pan-Arab online news portal that read, "Security services destroyed a network of homosexuals following complaints to the Morality Unit of the Interior Ministry." After surveillance, the report continues, the detectives found out that all of the people who visited the apartment were gay, and the location was a place set up for gays to commit sodomy. The ringleaders of the gay prostitution operation included a top producer at Egyptian TV, a fabric merchant, an accountant, and a young man who worked with foreign press. Following the raid, 8 people were arrested, and police confiscated gay pornography on the detainees' computers and on their cell phones.
And finally, far from the Middle East, but in another chilling example of government abuse, Equality Maryland, the U.S. state's largest LGBT rights organization, was among at least 32 groups classified as security threats in a state police database. Targeted organizations also included Amnesty International and the Hiroshima-Nagasaki Commemoration Committee, all deemed to be terrorists by the state's Homeland Security and Intelligence Division, which also kept dossiers on at least 50 individual activists. For example, police files described Equality Maryland's plans to hold rallies outside the State House in Annapolis to press for reversal of the state's ban on same-gender marriage among its alleged terrorist activities. Copies of the files were obtained through a lawsuit by the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland. A dozen Democratic lawmakers at a press conference held to condemn the files this week promised to introduce legislation to prevent future surveillance of nonviolent groups. According to a story in the Baltimore Sun, the spying program began in 2005 and continued for at least a year under Republican Governor Robert Ehrlich, who left office in 2007. He's denied knowing about the program, but Sheila Hickson, lead sponsor of the Freedom of Association and Assembly Protection Act of 2009 in the House of Delegates, said it was clear that state police get their orders from the executive department. They don't just decide on their own to spy on a group because they have nothing else to do. Under the proposed bill, police would need reasonable, articulated suspicion of actual criminal activity before they could conduct surveillance.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 31st, 2009, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
Would you have the courage to be a splash of color in a black and white world? That's how her flatmate describes a Kenyan lesbian activist. You'll meet the colorful Pauline Kimani later in the program. The principal of a school in northern Thailand determined late last year that between 10 and 20% of his students identified as transgender. So, in addition to the blue bathrooms for boys and pink ones for girls, he established a third. Its doors are half blue and half pink. For some insights into trans life in the Southeast Asian country, Radio Netherlands human rights reporter Jonathan Goubert talked with activist Sutitra Simsiriwong, who told him he could just call her Crystal.
Well, Crystal, what do you think of the school's initiative of putting in a separate toilet for transgender children?
You have to understand that the school is for boys and girls. So when boys is not a boy anymore and boys want to dress as a woman, they might act as a girls. But when they get into the girls' toilet, all the girls cannot accept them to use the same toilet as they use. And when this kind of group go to the boys' toilet, they feel that they might be threatened by all the boys when they want to use the same toilets as their group. So this is the problem that the master of the school feel this is a real. So they have to confront with the problem by accepting the truth and build the third toilet and try to show people that this school it's really care of all the students, no matter who you are or no matter what they are.
So what I'm hearing here is that you like the idea of the separate transgender toilet.
Yes, actually, we love the idea, but this is just only the beginning of the story. Because when the students, when they grow up and they just like graduated from the school, they might not want to get back to this toilet anymore. Because once that they can choose the way that they want to live, they will choose to be a man or a woman. If they want to be a man, they can be a gay. And if they want to live as a woman, they will dress as a woman and they will become a transgender. And when they become transgender, they will go to the woman's toilet. But the reason why we have the transgender toilet in the school, because these kids are too young to have the hormone therapy. These kids are too young to have the operation properly. So that's why we have to have the third toilet for them.
Crystal, in most of the world, there is a stigma attached to being transgender. How is it in Thailand?
In Thailand, if you are transgender, you have to be very beautiful. That's the only one thing that it's the characteristic of transgender. If you are not, you have trouble.
Crystal, are you saying to me that if you want to be transgender, it's fine, but only if you're beautiful?
Of course, like when you come out from the closet, your parents will be really sad about our decision. But in Thai society, it's okay for you to be a transgender because it's your business. But if you're a transgender, you have to be very beautiful because...
What happens if you're not?
You will be blamed by all the people that why you are really ugly and why you are not as beauty as others. So that's why plastic surgery is really popular in all transgender women.
Why is Thailand different from other countries?
Because we have the best transgender shows in the world. And we have the most beautiful transgender women in the world. We have the best hospital to operate or the sexual operation in the world. So this land can transform the man to woman easily and be able to make them as beauty as possible. When you see my pictures, I'm just the average of the transgender in this society. But if you see the beauty pageant of the transgender woman, you will be amazed by all the pictures that you can't believe that this used to be a man before.
So let me just see if I understand you correctly. You're saying that the acceptance of transgenderism in Thai society is directly related to how successful Thai society has been able to transform men into women, at least on the outside.
Yes.
Wow, I think there's a lesson there to be learned from other countries, that if you want to get transgenderism accepted in your society, you better make sure that they're beautiful.
That's why when we try to get together as a Thai transgender woman group and to meet all the press, we try to educate the society in Thailand that to be a transgender woman, you don't have to be beautiful. We can be a lawyer, we can be an accountant, we can be a beauty advisor, we can be a doctor. So the concept of transgender is changing now. You don't have to be very beautiful, but you have to have a brain to survive in this society.
Well, it sounds to me like Thai society is making tremendous progress with regards to your rights. How do people treat you today, Crystal?
They don't notice that I'm a transgender woman. They thought I'm just a normal woman. So that's why they don't have to treat me exceptionally unless I show my identity cards.
What happens when you show your identity card?
Last year, I went into the club on the basement of the Novotel Hotel. So when I show my identity cards, the receptionist told me, sorry, we are not welcome the transgender.
Oh, and what did you say?
I said, okay, thank you very much and see you on Monday.
What do you mean see you on Monday? You were going to come back and try again?
No, I called the Bangkok Rainbow Organization. So I asked for the lawyer that do all the human rights. And when I tell all the story, they ask me, are you ready to appear on the news? I said, yes. So the press release was done and spread to all the newspaper. And I appeared on the first page of all the newspaper in Thailand.
And what happened then?
The Bangkok Rainbow Organization has the campaign with 24 of the Asian gay and lesbian organization and ask for the Novotel group to remove all the gay-friendly tag on the website, in every single website to all over the world, and all the conference room or the seminar canceled.
Really? And have they changed their policy?
Yes, I request them to have the press conference just to apologize me. This is the first time of my life that I was treated like that, so I have to fight for the rights. And my case get into the drafting of the constitution of Thailand. So it's really like the right time and the right person and the right way.
Suchidat Simsirwang, or Crystal, thank you very much. You were a delightful guest.
Thank you very much.
Jonathan Gruber is a human rights reporter for Radio Netherlands.
Hello, this is the actor Michael Emerson. I play Ben on Lost. It's not easy being one of the others. So if time travel or moving the island isn't an option and you're feeling sort of lost, try listening to Greg and Lucia on This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
A new This Way Out update has been posted on our website. For recent programming information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to www.thiswayout.org.
Discrimination, exclusion, hate crimes, drug abuse, suicide. It's a depressing outlook for most of Kenya's closeted LGBT community. They're intimidated by the law there making homosexuality a crime punishable by up to 14 years in prison. But some people believe things can change. Pauline Kimani is a 23-year-old equal rights activist and one of Kenya's few out lesbians. This Way Out's Arusha Topatsini met Kimani in Nairobi.
I should be living in a world that's ideal for me. And everybody else should have that right of living in a world that they define ideal for themselves.
No, you can't make me sacrifice my freedom of choice.
Pauline Kimani smiles and sits back as Annie DiFranco's militant melodies sweep across the room. In work as in leisure, Pauline is serious and committed, a choice she made early in life. At the age of 16, Pauline told her family she was lesbian.
I felt afraid because for a long time I had heard stories, especially in schools or with my mom, that attraction between people of the same sex wasn't normal and it was considered evil and un-African.
Pauline's mother took her for therapy where she was given antidepressants to cure her. Her sister accused her of bringing shame to the family. Her father accepted her choice but died soon after. Only her younger brother Edwin has stood by Pauline over the years, respecting both her sexuality and activism.
I feel saddened that you can judge someone by his or her sexual preferences. At the end of the day, let your inside be judged, not your sexuality.
7 years down the line, her sister is more reconciled with Pauline's sexuality, but her relationship with her mother is still fraught with pain.
Having my mom come from a very Christian background and read and translate and interpret the Bible the way everybody else is doing gives her grounds for which to hate the lesbian in me. But I expect her to challenge her bias judgment because in the end, it's the same Bible that's about preaching love.
In Kenya, homosexuality is considered a crime both against Christianity and Islam, with many churches running sexual orientation conversions and systematically banning homosexuals from attending service. American conservative pastors who regularly tour and have daily television shows in Kenya have also solidified homophobic beliefs.
And people will not think beyond the boxes that have been put, male and female. And if we use the same binaries to challenge the existence of diversity, then we will never get to a point where we embrace diversity as a total. And we will never be able to define ourselves as a society that includes everyone.
A splash of color against a background that is black or white. This is how flatmate Rosaline Odoyo, a 24-year-old law graduate, describes Pauline.
Pauline is the only gay person I know in Kenya that has put a face to what she stands for. The idea of two women being together sexually is still being downplayed as a sexual fantasy for men. Once you put your foot down and say, actually, no, this is my way of life, the Kenyan way starts to feel threatened.
Pauline moved in with Rosaline in September. She'd just been attacked and threatened in her neighborhood after appearing on Kenya's first talk show on homosexuality. She decided to leave. It wasn't the first time, says Pauline, nor does she expect it to be the last.
In being a lesbian and being open about it, I have had to pay the price of rebelling against societal norms. And the first time was when I came out to a group of boys in my class. I was in college then. One of them had always wanted to have a relationship with me.
Pauline waits until everyone has left the room before continuing with her story. She and her four friends went out and back to her place for drinks. The event was meant to celebrate her coming out. She then offered to drive them back home.
Almost approaching one of the guys' house, one of them just grabbed me from behind. And then they started ripping my clothes apart. And that's the time that they ripped me.
Pauline did not tell anyone about it and did not report it. She then tried to commit suicide, and soon after she was raped again by an unknown group of boys on campus. It's nothing new, she says. Rape has always been used to intimidate assertive women in Kenya, like feminists and female politicians.
There's this belief that if a lesbian had sex with a man, then they will be cured of their lesbianism. The question of sexual violence against women, whether they're lesbian or any kind of women, and for that matter, transgendered people and very feminine gay men. People feel threatened by the idea of something they are not used to.
But some of life's best lessons are learned at the worst times.
Surviving these attacks, says Pauline, has given her the strength to keep on fighting for LGBT and women's rights, which is why she joined Kenya's Gay Coalition within a month of its creation 2 years ago. From the onset, the coalition decided to prioritize on HIV healthcare and treatment.
And in 2006, the Gay and Lesbian Coalition was invited to the National AIDS Control Council when they accepted that the MSM community, or the men who have sex with men, needed special attention as a vulnerable group within the HIV/AIDS epidemic.
Studies estimate that sex between men account for the transmission of at least 5 to 10% of HIV cases in Kenya, with many gay men leading double lives as married heterosexuals. Yet HIV counseling and treatment programs have been systematically geared towards heterosexuals, and cases of LGBT people being denied healthcare are very common amongst the community. One of the major breakthroughs for Kenya's Gay Coalition was to partner up with Liverpool VCT, the only HIV counseling and treatment center in Kenya, to cater to LGBT people.
And people feel more comfortable talking about the gay community as related to HIV and how we can work towards prevention, treatment and care of everybody for universal access to HIV and AIDS programs. HIV and AIDS has been like an entry point for the gay community to start engaging or to start having dialogues with the larger society and the government on the issues relating to the LGBTI rights in Kenya.
Pauline marched at the 2006 World AIDS Day when Kenya's Gay Coalition went public for the first time. And then at the 2007 World Social Forum, where also for the first time, LGBT people from the East African community reclaimed public space to demand their rights. If not any social recognition, at least people now know we exist, says Pauline Kimani.
No, you can't make us sacrifice our freedom of choice.
Reporting from Nairobi in the East African country of Kenya, I'm Arusha Topatini for This Way Out.
You can find the website for the Gay and Lesbian Coalition of Kenya at www.galck.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, Pam Marshall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Michael Emerson, Sherry Lunn, and Alicia Topazzini contributed program material. Thanks also to Jonathan Gruber and Eric Boschema at Radio Netherlands. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WGDR Plainfield, Vermont, 3CR Fitzroy, Victoria, Contact FM, Hamilton, New Zealand, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.